The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from CenturyLink Field, welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. And oh, what a day of broadcasting we have ahead for you here on your home of the Seattle Seahawks, 97.3 Cairo FM. Welcome to The Dory Monson Show. All the eyes of America will be on Seattle tonight, and more specifically right here on CenturyLink Field, where the Seahawks now have an opportunity. After the results of the NFL games yesterday, the Seahawks have an opportunity to take over first place in the NFC West. They would be tied with the 49ers if they win tonight, the Seahawks. But they've already beat the 49ers. They have a tie-break edge there. And they have a chance at the best record in the NFC. And in fact, at the analytics site, 538.com, they say that if the Seahawks win this game tonight, Seattle would have a 60% chance of not only winning the division, but getting a first-round bye, which means having one of the two best records in the NFC. So this is a huge game tonight, but it's pretty huge for the other team, too, Minnesota Vikings. They are one of the best teams in the NFL. They have just been playing fantastic, and this should be a great battle here tonight. And we are going to have lots of coverage, but here's what we're doing. We got the Dory Monson Show till 2 o'clock this afternoon. There is some sports news that I'm going to be talking about, but we have all the other news that you're used to hearing on The Big Show. And then at 2 o'clock, I'll be joined by all my Seahawks pregame co-hosts, Paul Moyer, Michael Bumpus, Ray Roberts, and Jordan Babineau. And at 2 o'clock, we'll shift into Seahawks pregame mode as we count down to kickoff for this big game between the Vikings and the Seahawks. But believe it or not, there is football news that's leading off our show today, but it has nothing to do with the Seahawks. Let's get to the breaking news.
The Big Lead, breaking news.
But we begin with some breaking news, as just in the last hour, we got word from the University of Washington that their head football coach, Chris Peterson, will step down after the upcoming Huskies bowl game. Chris Peterson won the Apple Cup. Mike Leach has never defeated Chris Peterson in all of their Apple Cup matchups. This latest one on Friday was a nice win for the Huskies, but this is a bit of a bombshell, at least to me it is, but somebody who's much more dialed in than me is Jay Keeps. You can hear him every afternoon, noon to 3 on our sister station, 710 ESPN Seattle. Hey, Jake, good to talk to you this afternoon.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Excited to talk with you.
Okay, so this is a bombshell for me. Was it for you as well?
It was, actually. I was on the phone just talking with someone, and Kyle Brown, our producer, walked by me and just said, hey, Chris Peterson's resigned, Jimmy Lake taking over. And I was like, yeah, funny. Very, very funny, Kyle. It's not a joke that should be thrown around there. And it was true. And I couldn't believe it. And I can't tell you how many parents from current players that are on the roster I got, you know, just asking, you know, what's going on. And so there's still a lot of confusion even for players within that program. This is shocking news. And Chris Peterson having unprecedented success at UW in his span during his time, not just on the field, but off of it as well, helping develop a program that was churning out great overall young people. And Chris Peterson's absence is going to be sorely missed.
Yeah, they seem to be doing things the right way, sent a lot of guys to the NFL, and then his overall win percentage, 79% between Boise State and Washington. That's the second best in all of college football. It's better than Nick Saban at Alabama. So, okay, so you said all these players that you're close to, their families are asking you what's going on. Do you have an answer? What is going on?
Well, the clear answer right now is that they have hired Jimmy Lake, their defensive coordinator, to be the next head coach for the University of Washington, and I think that that was the best plan that they could have had. I think this is something that has been in the works for quite some time, Dory, because you have to wonder why Jimmy Lake hasn't taken some of these bigger job opportunities that have been out there. most recently last year, he was offered the defensive coordinator job at Alabama and continued to stay in the same role at the University of Washington. And I think Jimmy Lake loved coaching at the University of Washington, but also you have to wonder if he knew that Chris Peterson was thinking about this for some time now. And I think that, unfortunately for Chris Peterson, and it's really sad when you think about this, I really believe that he is stepping away because this job has just worn him down. That he has high principles, and sometimes as a football coach at a high university that has high standards, not only academically, but on the field as well, sometimes recruiting can be very tough. And sometimes there's some hypocrisy that is said. Chris Peterson, being a guy that has, you know, very proudly always said OKG, we want OKGs in our program, and to be able to maintain that for such a long period of time, and to have the frustrations that the high demands that Husky fans have, I think that can wear on you as you're a college football coach. And Chris Peterson just seems to me as a guy that football isn't everything to him.
Okay, so I'm just a dumb guy who's trying to read between the lines here. So is what you're saying that in order, I mean, he made the Final Four National Championship playoff a few years ago. In order to continue to compete at that level, would he have had to have sacrificed some of his principles of the types of players that he went out and recruited? And was there some pressure from Husky fans or maybe even some on campus who wanted him to sacrifice those principles? I mean, is that kind of what you're saying here?
Yeah, Dory, it is a genuine factor in all of this. I really, truly believe that. I think, you know, Chris Peterson, it is a tough gig as a college football coach, and especially as a head football coach. Not only are you just coaching X's and O's and trying to execute at the highest level, but you have to deal with recruiting. And Chris Peterson, over the years, has given us tons and tons of soundbite of how much he dislikes this recruiting process. And I think it can wear you down over time. And Chris Peterson, obviously having great success at Boise State, he had the luxury of being able to recruit a different type of way and not have to compete with so many different universities and at the highest level for the top five-star, four-star recruits. And I think that part of it kind of wore him down a little bit. And this last season, obviously they did not perform to expectations, and the year before that, they go to the Rose Bowl, and yet there were so many gripes about the offense and the lack of production and the criticism of Jake Browning. I think all of it just kind of jumbled into one, Dory, is why Chris Peterson is unfortunately walking away from the University of Washington. And now you're moving on to Jimmy Lake, who has done a great job as a defensive coordinator, who I think is going to be a great fit here. He's going to bring a ton of energy, but he has never been a head coach before. So right. This is something that is going to be a wait-and-see situation at the University of Washington, which is something that I don't know if many Husky fans are excited about, since you've been able to have the luxury of 6-7 years of incredible sustained success with a proven head coach in Chris Peterson.
Yeah, well, and, you know, everybody still lives under the shadow of Don James.
Yes.
Who, you know, he was one of my great mentors in life, and I became really close with Coach James. But I just think that is still a shadow that is cast long across Mott like there.
And, Dory, I wouldn't disagree with that. It is a huge undertaking to be the head coach at the University of Washington. Are there sometimes unrealistic expectations? Yes. But also, you have to have an energy. And what I would say is Jimmy Lake, probably the best way I could wrap it into one in terms of what he's going to bring, is I think he's going to bring the energy and juice that Steve Sarkisian brought from just a recruiting standpoint, but also be a very, very well-dialed-in X's and O's guy that understands who he is, what he is about. And so I don't think this is more substance than flash, but he is going to do an incredible job in recruiting and is going to look forward to that challenge. You see it on the defensive side of the ball, and that's been the interesting thing, is as you've watched this University of Washington team this year in particular, the defensive side of the ball is continuing to churn out talent after talent after talent into the NFL and continuing to reload. It is because Jimmy Lake has a different recruiting philosophy and approach than Chris Peterson and Bush Hamden have done on offense.
Okay.
And so you've seen now over the last two seasons that what has been one of the biggest weaknesses of the University of Washington, well, skill position has been a big part of that, And I don't think that that's going to continue to be the same issue under Jimmy Lake. I think he's going to recruit very, very well. And when you talk about, you know, the future, you've got some awesome quarterbacks coming in the pipeline for the University of Washington, and you want to build a great pool of talent around those quarterbacks in the future, along with this young defense this year that is going to continue to get better and more veterans. So I think Jimmy Lake's the right guy for this job. Obviously, Chris Peterson leaves a huge void, and it's unfortunate, just like we talked about earlier, Dory, about, unfortunately, this isn't him walking away, retiring. This is him, as he described it, needing to recharge his batteries. And so yeah. I can just assume that this whole thing has just been just a little too much for him and his family over the last couple seasons.
Got it. All right. Well, I was blindsided by this. So
same here, Dory.
I appreciate all the insights, Jake. Thanks a lot. A lot for coming on with me today.
Absolutely. Anytime.
All right. You can hear him on the Tom, Jake, and Stacy show on 710 ESPN Seattle. Chris Peterson out. His choice, apparently, as Husky football head coach. Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
I do want to talk about Seahawks, and I'm going to get to all kinds of other news of the day, too. But that's a shame about Chris Peterson, because he does things the right way. And the message that I get out of my conversation with Jake Heaps is, if you want to have a chance of succeeding at the highest level in college sports, you got to compromise your values. And I do think that that's a shame. Second winningest coach, winning percentage in all of college football, even better than Nick Saban at Alabama. And he feels like he's burned out now. That's really a shame. At the pro level, here at CenturyLink Field, where we are broadcasting this afternoon, Seahawks take on the Minnesota Vikings tonight. Huge game for the Seahawks. They can move into a first-place tie, but they would have the tiebreaker because the 49ers lost on a last-second kick in Baltimore yesterday.
Make it eight in a row for Baltimore!
And with that win for the Ravens, the 49ers lost, and so the Seahawks can move into that first-place tie with a tiebreaker edge. So Seattle now in fantastic shape if they can beat a fantastic Minnesota Vikings team here tonight. We'll talk about this much more when we shift into our pregame coverage at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Next up in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. I sense a Dory rant coming on.
I didn't have a chance to talk about this last week, but there was a funeral march at SeaTac Airport last week. And that's because some airport food workers or airline food workers, they are contracted with Alaska Airlines and Delta Airlines, and they want their pay to be raised to at least $16 an hour that they say other airport employees earn. It was interesting to me, a couple of things. First of all, the way they did this, because there are a lot of people, I'm not a nervous flyer. I'm a pretty good flyer. But there are a lot of nervous flyers. And these food workers decided to illustrate their conflict with the airlines by, they had a band that was playing funeral dirge marches as they carried a coffin through the airport. And I think that to make your customers, some of whom are already skittish about flying, and then to play a funeral dirge and carry a coffin through SeaTac, that's a misguided strategy, it seems. Our news partners at Cairo 7, they covered this story. Deborah Horn, the reporter, talked to this guy who makes $12 an hour.
I pay $544 a month for my medical.
For your medical, you pay, that's almost $600.
Yes, ma'am.
And then you get paid $1,250?
$1,250, like most of our co-workers will be $1,250 an hour.
Okay, so look, everybody is worth what somebody is willing to pay us. I mean, that's the way the world works. And if your employer isn't willing to pay you what you think you're worth, then That's the beauty of free market capitalism. You can go to some other employer and say, hey, will you give me what I'm worth? And that's how you get equilibrium. The thing I wanted to talk about is the print story in the Seattle Times about this. Because they talked to the secretary of Unite Here. In fact, I have a soundbite. Stefan Moritz from the union.
The airline industry has to do better, and Sky Chefs and Gate Gourmet workers are doing an essential job for these airlines.
Okay, so they say the job that they're doing is worth $16 an hour. But then there was a quote in the Seattle Times story that I found interesting. The Port of Seattle is supporting the union workers here. And they said in a statement, every worker deserves a living wage and benefits that allow them to support themselves and their families with dignity. That's something we hear a lot these days. Every worker deserves something. And I'm here to tell you, that just simply is not true. One of my first jobs when I was 16, I was assembling game pieces for a little board game. The print shop I was working for was manufacturing. The game was called Stock Block. And one of my jobs was we had Ziploc bags that I set out on a table, and I dropped plastic game pieces into those bags and then sealed them up and dropped them in a tube. I was making $2.50 an hour. That was the minimum wage when I was 16 years old. I did not deserve to support myself and a family with dignity. I didn't have the job skills. And I certainly wasn't doing a job that produced enough in revenues for me to make much more than $2.50 an hour. The guys who ran the print shop, they were just barely scraping by. And this notion that you deserve to be able to raise a family regardless of the job and the job skills, that's just silly. Putting little plastic game pieces in a Ziploc is not exactly the kind of job that I should have been able to raise a family on. And nor could I with my $2.50 an hour. If you want to make more money, acquire the job skills that make you more in demand to employers who are willing to pay you more. It's that simple. And that is your Big Lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
60 Minutes and Anderson Cooper. They came into Seattle to do a story about homelessness. But it was a mess of a story if they were trying to illustrate how horribly we're handling this situation. Details next here on the Dory Monson Show. Broadcasting live from CenturyLink Field, where, gosh, less than 5 hours from now, the Seahawks and the Minnesota Vikings will kick it off for Monday Night Football. I'm going to do the Dory Monson Show until 2 o'clock this afternoon. And then at 2, we will transition into Seahawks pregame coverage for what is a hugely important game for the Seahawks coming up tonight. We've got a lot of news to talk about between now and then, including last night, 60 Minutes did a story from Seattle. And it was just really amazing to watch. They were talking about how rent is obscene in Seattle and the issues that have forced people to live in tents all around our region. And they profiled three people primarily. One was, three families. One was a couple named Josiah and Trisha Wood. They have this adorable little boy who was just about to turn 3 years old. And they sleep in a tent with the little boy between mom and dad so that their body heat can help keep their little boy warm. And they admitted that Josiah and Trisha, they both have drug problems in the past. He with meth and she with heroin. But they claim to 60 Minutes that they are clean now.
We don't want our son here. We don't want to be here. But as of right now, this is the safest place for us.
Absolutely.
Because we know the people, we know the rules, and
our family gets to stay together.
And our family stays together.
Okay, so living in a tent is the safest place, they say, that they have to work to find showers.
We go to a downtown place called Urban Rest Stop for a shower and laundry.
How far away is that?
From here, that's a 45-minute.
45-minute bus ride.
Yes.
You take a 45-minute bus ride in order to go take a shower.
Just to go
and
take a
shower.
And then
wait maybe for 45 minutes to an hour and a half to take that shower.
And then they told Anderson Cooper in 60 Minutes that they didn't think they would ever be homeless.
We never thought we'd
ever.
Be there. Until something hits you so hard that it just sweeps your feet out from underneath you completely, you can't prepare for it.
Okay, a comment on that. They seem like a nice couple, but when meth and heroin take over your lives, then homelessness is often a consequence of the drug addiction. And now they say that they used to think it was just about getting a job.
I used to be one of those people that thought that if anyone was homeless, they just needed to go get a job. That would solve their homeless problems.
How would you answer that question now? Why can't they just get a job?
Oh, my goodness. Maybe they have a job.
Okay. And in fact, he says that he makes $19.50 an hour at his job, which raises the question. If you are clean, you're not using drugs, you've been making $19.50 an hour and living in a tent for the last year and a half, and you want what's best for your little two-year-old boy, you should have been able to save a little money. Because living in a tent, you have no housing expenses. And there are all kinds of services that are available. The city makes services incredibly available for the people who are out on the streets. And if you're clean and you want to turn your life around, you certainly have lots of options. And the wife, Trisha Wood, she said they just need an opportunity.
We've absolutely made mistakes in our lives, but that doesn't mean that we don't deserve to raise our family in a house that we can afford. We are more than willing to pay for it. We just need someone to give us a chance to do it.
Okay, my next point. Why do you live in Seattle? If you say that your goal is to have a house you can afford, this is, along with San Francisco, this is the most unaffordable housing market in the country. So if you want your three-year-old boy to not have to sleep in a tent on these coming cold winter nights, sandwiched between mom and dad, and you are clean and sober, as they told 60 Minutes, and you do have, I mean, they both seem articulate. If they're clean and sober, there are jobs out there. We have the lowest unemployment, what is known by economists as full employment in America today. There are jobs out there. Why stay in Seattle, where the housing is the most expensive, instead of going anywhere else in the country with your little boy where you could get a house on the $19.50 an hour that Josiah says that he's making? And Anderson Cooper talked about this couple.
Drug addiction is what led the Woods to become homeless. For Josiah, it was meth. For Trisha, heroin. They were living in Alaska at the time. Josiah's parents took care of Ethan while they both got treatment. Trisha came to Seattle for rehab and afterwards decided it was a good city for a fresh start. They say they haven't used drugs in nearly 2 years, but it's been hard to find housing.
Okay, but if you have parents who are willing to take care of your little boy in Alaska, where housing is a tiny fraction of what it is in Seattle, why wouldn't you go back to Alaska? They say they want to stay here because they like it here, but don't you love your little boy? And if other parts of the country would allow you to not sleep in a tent on winter nights with your adorable three-year-old boy, why wouldn't you make that choice to go elsewhere, work, be able to afford an apartment, maybe even a house? But this is a bad place with the housing dynamics to get a job. There's a lot that was so wrong with this 60-minute story. Let me take a quick time out, and I want to continue to go through these sound bites because there are a lot of questions that I wish Anderson Cooper had asked. And I'll explain as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. Back at CenturyLink Field. We'll shift into Seahawks pregame coverage at 2 o'clock this afternoon, but we have a lot of news to talk about between now and then, including I've been running down the 60 Minutes piece on homelessness in Seattle from last night. Anderson Cooper was profiling people who are sleeping in tents around here. And this is one that made no sense to me at all. Emily Broyle, she is a postal worker, delivers mail, has been doing that for 5 years, and she sleeps in a tent here in the Seattle area, and she told 60 Minutes why.
Emily Broyle also lives in Seattle. She's been delivering mail for the U.S. Postal Service for nearly 5 years.
Hey, Larry.
In her uniform, you'd never know she, too, is unsheltered. She lives in a rickety old RV parked by the side of the road, which meets the government's definition of homelessness.
Why are you living in an RV?
Because rent is obscene here. Yeah. I can't afford it. I just think I'm working my butt off, and I don't want to just spend all of my money paycheck to paycheck just to survive.
Given the work you do, I think most people would think, well, that's a job that one can live off.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are shocked when they find out that I work full time.
And what's the solution here?
Affordable housing. Build it. Quit selling out to developers.
Okay. I got lots of stuff to say about this. So I looked up the average pay for a U.S. postal worker. With 5 years experience, and that's how long she's been doing this, the average pay is $58,000 a year. Now, there's no reason, if you're making $58,000 a year, that you have to live in a tent. And again, when she says the problem is rent is obscene here, the Postal Service will work with its carriers. If you want to transfer to another part of the country, they'll work with you on that. And almost any transfer would take you to a place with lower rent. So that's what was so frustrating. Anderson Cooper did not ask her, how in the world can you be homeless if you're making $58,000 a year? That's what I want an answer to. Because these stories just didn't make sense. They introduced us to a guy named Jeff Gold, who's also homeless.
Jeff Gold was unable to pay the rent on his apartment and was evicted nearly 6 years ago. When we met him in August, he just started a new job as a database coordinator. He was 58 years old and a graduate of the University of Illinois. This is where Jeff was sleeping, beside a church on a sheet of cardboard. Each morning, he gathered his few possessions, stuffed them in a plastic bag, and stored them in a friend's truck. Then he headed for work at the Environmental Protection Agency.
Okay, so this guy got a government job with the EPA, data input guy, and Anderson Cooper talked to him about drinking.
During our interview, Jeff smelled of liquor, and by his bed there were empty bottles of vodka. A step up, he says, from the alcohol he normally would buy with food stamps.
How do you get alcohol with food stamps?
Cooking sherry.
You can get cooking sherry.
It's the only alcohol you can buy on food stamps.
Do you think you have an addiction issue with alcohol?
Oh, I'm definitely an alcoholic.
Have you tried to stop? Or do you want to stop?
No. For me, I pretty much have it under control in the sense that I get to work every morning.
I mean, you're sleeping outside on rocks with your possessions in a bag. So it's not all under control.
I'm moving forward. Okay. I got paid a couple days ago.
Okay. So, unfortunately, this guy has made it a choice. He doesn't want help because help's out there. They will guide you. These Compass teams that are out there, they will take you, and we, the taxpayers, will pay for help. But this guy didn't want help. And, you know, Anderson Cooper said he stank of alcohol when they interviewed him. And then an update on Jeff.
Last we heard from Jeff Gold, he'd been fired from his job at the EPA because of poor attendance.
Whew. You know how tough it is to get fired from a government job? But he just didn't show up. Now, is that some damning indictment of Seattle? And that we don't do enough? Because here's the subtext with all the people they talk to. You and I, the taxpayers, aren't giving enough tax dollars. And everybody's solution is, well, let's just build more and more low-income housing for the couple that has family in Alaska but doesn't want to go back to Alaska, where housing is much cheaper and there's a parent who would take care of their little boy. For the postal worker who makes $58,000 a year and claims she cannot make ends meet. For Jeff, the government worker for the EPA, who got fired because of poor attendance and who was drinking so much he couldn't even be sober for his 60 Minutes interview. And I'll tell you, the one thing they got right was Mayor Jenny Durkan looked like a clueless fool. And I'll get to that audio a little bit later as well. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can text me at 98973. More from CenturyLink Field, the Dory Monson Show. Started.